Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
4:09 here on Drive Time with Tarusha. Hope you're having a great afternoon. It's Thursday, February 9th. Busy news day here in Minnesota and western Wisconsin with the vice president up in St. Cloud. Some breaking news this afternoon. Laura Oakes in our newsroom doing a great job keeping us up to date, and they'll do so throughout the show. It is 4 o'clock, and every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 o'clock, we do Tarusha Eats. Tarusha Eats today, sponsored by Liquor Boy, and I'm so glad to have Sameh Wadi from World Street Kitchen, Milk Jam Creamery, one of my favorite food people. Can I say one of my favorite people in the Twin City?
Oh, that's too kind. Thanks for having me.
Now I'm going to destroy you. it's great to have you here. How are you? How are your restaurants doing?
Thank you. I'm doing terrible.
You look awful.
Yeah, thank you.
It's good we're on the radio.
I'm here because I look awful. They're like, there's nothing better for me to do than talk to you today. So,
good.
You know, yeah. Have we started? Is this?
No, this is not on. This is not. We'll edit all of this out from the podcast.
That's excellent.
So, yeah, now we're live. Right, exactly. World Street Kitchen.
It's doing good. You know, we've had a very difficult first of the year with all of this weather. People don't want to eat ice cream at Milk Jam.
Weird.
In the snow, which is something that is kind of terrifying. Like Minnesota, I thought you were harder than this, right?
Milk Jam Creamery opened in the winter.
In January, 7 years ago.
And so
I'm not very smart. Yes, we've already established that much.
I think you are very smart Well, I'll say this. So earlier we were talking to Brad, who's our boss here, about you. And he got really sad about the fact that Saffron is gone. And that was your restaurant. You opened Saffron when you were
23 years old.
23 years old.
Yep. I was a baby. I wasn't even allowed to vote yet.
Saffron. Might be true at the time. It was a different time.
It was a whole different, yeah.
You, I think, opened that restaurant. Or do you think you were ahead of your time?
I feel like every single move that I've done in my culinary career has been ahead of its time.
Saffron. And you don't mean that in a braggadocious way.
No, I mean it like I'm not very smart. Like,
bad at business.
Yeah, I'm bad at business. If I was really good at business, you know, I would open Saffron right now. Or even a restaurant like World Street Kitchen was also ahead of its time. But Saffron, that was a special, special place. I talk to people all the time that say bring that place back. But, you know.
So Saffron, for people who don't know, was I don't know. You could say it was a Mediterranean style restaurant.
Yeah.
But right near, not too far from Target Center, by 112.
Yeah. And we did. So it was Mediterranean food with heavy influences from the Middle East and North Africa. It was sort of like my culinary heritage, if you will, coming from the Middle East myself, being Palestinian. And so that food really, really played into that culinary heritage.
And so that lasted for about 10 years,
10
right?
years, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. From 2007 is when that opened.
It did.
When I think of, there are two restaurants that I miss the most. The strip club in St. Paul, not a strip club, but the meat and fish restaurant, and Saffron.
That's very special to hear.
But I think you're... Yeah, when Alyssa and I think about like where we want to go out, and I think it was, part of it was the environment, part of it was the staff and the people. You know, your brother was.
He was okay. He was fine.
All right. Your brother was often there.
He was.
It just was a special place. And the food was, it's very interesting if you travel the country, the great food cities in the country, most of them have a restaurant that's sort of trying to do what you were doing in 2007.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is interesting.
Super ahead of its time.
Now, today, I actually think you're smart to not open a restaurant like that because I don't know if that's what people want to eat right now.
I think they still want to eat it, but I still think that like when I think of like the future of food, when I think of myself and what I crave is what food I want to cook. Mm. And that's more in line with what like World Street is doing to me personally.
World Street was a food truck at first.
Yes. And then we opened up the brick and mortar about 10 years ago. And I can't believe that restaurant is 10 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, like we were the first, like one of the first counter service restaurants. We were one of the first food trucks. We're always ahead of the curve in terms of what things are happening. And to me, like cooking without borders and the ability to kind of just mix and match and do it in a way that is approachable and accessible to a lot of people is what brings me joy right now in terms of the cooking styles.
Sami Wadi owns World Street Kitchen, Milk Jam Creamery, the ice cream store right next door to World Street Kitchen on Lyndale. What food item do you think it was that really made World Street kind of break through?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say it's either the rice bowl or the burrito, the Bangkok burrito or the yum yum rice bowl.
And that's what you mean by like crossing cultures.
Yep. Taking sort of Middle Eastern flavors, Southeast Asian flavors, Korean, some Mexican influence and just kind of mishmashing everything together and really cooking without seeing like borders in terms of countries, but looking at food traditions as more of a nomadic eye. And that was kind of like what my approach to food was when I opened that stuff.
So yeah. how do you kind of mesh that worldview, like what you're doing at World Street Kitchen, with another conversation that happens often in the food world about like appropriating other people's cultures? So like if I opened a Mexican restaurant, some people would say, come on, like we can't have this white guy opening a taco shop.
I think it's a very interesting conversation to have, and it's a very limiting conversation that tells me as a Palestinian American that I'm only allowed to cook Palestinian food.
Which would be
a travesty.
It would be
a travesty. We wouldn't have Bangkok burritos. We wouldn't have yum yum rice bowls.
Right.
If I wasn't allowed to play with food and
well, and
culture.
I don't want to tell Jorge Guzman that he can't do French cooking.
Or correct.
He can't do like, you know, because his heritage is Mexican.
Yeah,
like,
I think where appropriation becomes an issue is that if you take something and you call it your own, it's something that's happening to Palestinian food right now, where it's being appropriated by
because
a different group of people.
Because it's become trendy.
Israeli.
And so it's,
you know, so now it's become something other than Palestinian. So when we're having these kind of conversations.
Give me an example. What's an example of a kind?
I mean, anything that you would see in today's like modern Israeli restaurant has Palestinian roots in it.
Hmm.
So the most basic example, hummus.
Right.
That's the Arabic word for chickpea. And so it's become synonymous with Israeli food.
Israeli food, yeah.
And it's not being talked about as a Palestinian dish.
Interesting.
Right? To me, that's more appropriating than it is saying, okay, this is an Arab dish or a Palestinian dish that we now take, you know, we take pride in, which I think is another thing that like, you know, when we're talking about like French-Vietnamese fusion, you know, there is a lot of that, you know, kind of the Vietnamese took some influence from the French and they have it in
just based
food.
On the geography.
Based
and
on
who was,
yeah, based on like conquering.
Who was conquering, just,
yeah,
who was
yeah,
there
exactly.
at the time. Which that's part of how the world evolves, right? So that's how flavors get transported.
Exactly. And you can't really say this dish is from this region because people were nomadic, right? So people changed.
But it's like Hmong food, right? Like what is it? How, what,
is it Lao? Is it Chinese? Is it Thai? Is it a combination of all of those things? And to me, that's putting those labels on things is where kind of it gets a little bit dicey.
Yeah.
That's why I like cooking without borders.
I like that. It's very interesting because I'm sensitive, and we're talking with Sami Wadi, the owner of World Street Kitchen, Milk Jam Creamery, because I think it does matter in the idea of like stealing something from other people's culture, especially if you're like in a dominant culture. When you steal something from a culture that here in the United States is more marginalized, like to me that feels icky.
I would agree with you 100%. Like, I wouldn't say a taco is Middle Eastern.
A taco, you know? I feel like tacos today belong to no one and everyone, right? Like, every culture makes tacos.
Well, as, like, if you're like, digging down deep into it, like, Al Pastor was inspired by Middle Eastern immigrants in Mexico. And so is it Middle Eastern or is it Mexican or is it both?
And does it
matter? Tacos árabes also.
Does it matter? I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe it does. To some
people, it definitely does. To others, it's, hey, this is delicious and I can't wait to stuff my face with it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And I fall on, you know, both ends of the equation, and I try to be cognizant of that. And I try to remind people that food brings joy and brings people together. And that's what I want to focus on.
Yeah. Sami Wadi, World Street Kitchen, Milk Jam Creamery. We're going to take a break. I want to talk about what your future hopes or dreams are. You said no more, Saffron's not coming back.
I don't think so.
Stop asking. Although if someone wants to pay you enough money.
Yes, yeah, unless there's somebody with deep pockets and a lot of broken hopes and dreams and holler at me.
Right, right. But World Street Kitchen, could you see more of these? And what are some of Sami Wadi's favorite places to go to in the Twin Cities that are not his own restaurants? We'll talk about that. Oh, plus it's National Pizza Day, so I need your top pizza choice. A lot of assignments for Sami. We'll be right back on DeRussia Eats here on CCO. Sami Wadi with us. World Street Kitchen on Lyndale, near Uptown. Do you guys say you're near Uptown?
No, not anymore.
It is amazing. I mean, during the pandemic, you guys, I think one of my favorite things about your takeout experience is that you could order and 10 minutes later it would be ready, which most restaurants were not ready to rock the way you guys were during the pandemic.
Yeah, that was like one of our saving graces during the pandy. It was just, I mean, when we're still kind of the same way, we still have a pretty crazy staff to just keep up with orders in a fast fashion.
But as much as people say that downtown was changed because of crime and because of protest, I believe that the neighborhood that suffered the most because, and again, you know, George Floyd suffered the most. So like we all keep this in perspective. But what happened to Uptown was largely driven by the fact that people destroyed parts of Uptown in protests that got way out of control.
Yeah.
And you were dealing with vandalism and windows breaking and lawlessness, even down. You're not in the thick of that Uptown area, but you guys had to deal with that too, right?
We sure did. And, you know, it's hard to think that it's been 3 years since this has happened, and it's hard to see how slowly things are moving. But we keep a positive outlook on it. We're excited about the neighborhood and where things are going, and we're kind of trying to stay kind of a little bit of a shining beam in there, trying to do cool and fun things that just gets people back in. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. There's rumors of restaurants opening around us and so on and so forth. So that's going to be kind of exciting to get some fresh blood in there.
Sami Wadi, we kind of jumped right into it, and I didn't ask you to tell a little bit about your story of how you ended up in food.
It was because of prison. Like when I was in prison. No, I'm totally joking. I was never in prison. I have to stop making this joke.
I know people believe it.
People like, do believe
this Palestinian guy probably was.
He definitely was. Look at his beard. He was definitely in prison. I brushed my beard before I came here.
It looks very nice.
And you haven't said anything, which I feel like really bad.
I'm sorry.
Anyways.
You'll see it on the podcast.
Yeah.
It looks very, very nice. You grew up around a family. Your broader family was involved in food.
Yeah, we moved to the United States. My family started moving here in the late 80s, started grocery stores and food businesses. And then I moved here in 97, and me and my brother Sad opened up our first restaurant just, you know, 10 years later.
And you had some success in national TV.
Yeah, something, I think it was called Iron Chef. I don't know if you've ever heard of the show.
A lot of people may have heard of that.
Yeah. I went up against a small guy. His name is Masaharu Morimoto.
I don't know.
I don't know if you know that guy.
But, and at the time, you were how old?
I was 12, or at least I felt like
you
it.
Look
it. I looked 12. Yeah, like if I watched that episode, I just go, "Who's this kid?" And he couldn't even grow a full beard at the time, you know. But actually, I did have a beard. But I had full head of hair, which was also weird. You know what happened? I don't know. I was 24 years old when that happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, World Street Kitchen and Milk Jam came after Saffron. And right now I just love spending my time creating ice creams. That's like my favorite thing to do.
Are you surprised that that kind of excites you or fills your cup?
Very, very much so. Because when you think about it, I went from, you know, fine dining to food truck to like counter service, and ice cream just is like the most logical next progression. You just keep stepping down.
Right.
You just keep stepping down or up in a way. And it's just really great coming up with like new flavors of ice cream and things that just bring people pure joy.
It is pure joy. What are your favorite flavors?
Okay, like right now. We have our, you know, chocolate/Valentine's Day flavors, and they're all chocolate based, which I'm not a huge chocolate fan. I know, sue me, but the white chocolate ice cream with the raspberry rose jam is
I love you.
That one is killer.
Okay.
And then there's a chocolate with a caramel and peanuts in it. Ooh. After we made it and we ate it, we're like, oh, we just made a Snickers bar into an ice cream. And that's super killer.
Adore You, that's called.
Yep.
Nice.
And then the third one that I am totally obsessed with is True Love. And that one is just chocolate freckled with some more chocolate and some almonds.
Is it different to create an ice cream flavor as compared to creating like the perfect savory dish, or are the principles sort of the same?
It kind of – what I think about when I'm creating ice cream, I think about a singular bite, because most people come, they take one single tiny little spoonful in terms of a sample, and that's how they base this $5 purchase on. This tiny little sample of
that
food.
That one bite.
That one bite.
So that's
I have
your
to
chance.
Make it delicious. Pack as much flavor into it as I can, into that one small little bite.
Huh. Because that's your only chance.
That's it.
Your shot.
Otherwise, they go,
What
ice cream wasn't even good.
So interesting.
Isn't it?
Milk Jam, I will say, like, to me, it's sort of amazing how much money people are willing to spend for ice cream. Because what's a pint of ice cream cost?
That's $11.
$11. And obviously we know, like, ingredient costs have gone up and up.
Insane.
And up. The price, your price hasn't actually gone up commensurate to what ingredients.
No. Our costs in the 7 years that we've been up have been over 30%, maybe 40% on just ingredients. And I think we just had our first 10% increase.
Your first price increase. Yeah.
In 7 years.
Why do you think, you know, when you first opened, were you worried? Like, gosh, is someone going to pay $5 for this?
I was always worried. You know, I tend to devalue my food a lot. And so I was always worried that, you know, it's ice cream. It should be simple. But then once you get into it and realize to make a good product, you have to use good ingredients and not really, you know, cheap out on the mix-ins and things of that nature. And that was really important to kind of stick to it. And now we get to do things like doing a build your own sundae kit for Valentine's Day. And when we first started doing it, you know, 100 years ago, it was like $25, $30. And right now it's like about $40. And that's where like packaging and,
it's what
and
stuff costs.
Yeah, it's what things cost.
Yeah.
Eggs, you know, we don't want to talk about how much eggs cost.
No,
you know, and it breaks my heart.
MilkJamCreamery.com is where you can order those flavors. You can order online, get that kit as well. Are you going to open more Milk Jams?
I want to.
I think people would respond.
I want to. Right now, one of my like long-term goals is trying to figure out what the next iteration of World Street Kitchen looks like. What is that? How does that
evolve? Concepts in it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is the next, you know, evolution of World Street Kitchen?
Maple Grove would love this.
I went to Maple Grove the other day for the first time in 20-some years that I've been here. And you live in a pretty amazing area.
There's a lot.
There's so much happening there. I was sleeping on your – I was making fun of where you live, and my God, I was so wrong.
You know, you used to be this cool 25-year-old
with a
restaurant, fine dining restaurant, and now you're waxing poetic about suburban Maple Grove. It happens.
It's amazing.
All right, we're out of time, but give me your top three restaurants in town.
Oh, my God. Okay, so First 79, hands down, my favorite restaurant in the Twin Cities. Well Done Brisket for the best. I would say Caspian for their kebabs. And then Culver's in Golden Valley. is that fair to say?
It's a legit.
The Golden Valley one.
Only like, the Golden Valley one.
Yeah, that one.
They got it on lock. Yeah. Caspian is close to U of M.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
I went there on your recommendation. Same, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Same Wadi, our guest on DeRussia Eats, brought to you by Liquor Boy 433. Traffic and weather is next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.